So we started the Mechiltas, and I don't remember exactly where we were, but I think we spoke about Shomer Chinam. Yeah. We spoke about Shomer Chinam. Okay, and then we spoke about the Kofar in the ancient Near East, even though it's in here. I'll just read the Mechilta very quickly at the bottom of page one, and I'm going to read select Mechiltas, because I didn't bring my Yerushalmi, a copy of the Yerushalmi, but okay. But I want to get to the Yerushalmi today if we can. Did you bring my Gemara?
I have my Gemara. I was going to give it to you if we got there.
My Yerushalmi is in my Gemara. Okay.
You brought my Yerushalmi too.
Okay, fine. Okay. Shnayim Yishalim. The Gamba Lavimas, the bottom of page one. You must be the Shemayim. At Omer be the Shemayim, or Eno Eli be the Adam. Kishu Omer im Kofa Yushas Alav Nasan Pinyon Nosho. Hanostin Pinyon Lumumasim be the Shemayim. You can give Pinyon only for those who are being put to death by God's hands. Umatal Moloma Moshi Masama Kerotsehu. Badayan ani Omer, you must be de Shemaim, ata Omer be de Shemaim, and be the Adam, Kishu Omer lo Sichu Kofer Nefesh Rotzeach, Ashehura Sholamus, Ha Enostin Pidyon Lemumasim be the Adam, Alvinostin Pidyon Lemumasim be de Shemaim. Mechilta, as is not uncommon in Mishnah Halacha, tends to be a little bit repetitive. Anyway, but this, as we mentioned 2 days ago, I think it was 2 days ago, is the notion that the Torah never allows money to be given as compensation for the taking of a life. Because that, and again, it's not to say the Torah doesn't place an economic value on life. There's the shor that kills, so the kofar, when it's a ben chorin, the kofar, when it's an eved, the shloshim shel eved, is based upon an assumption that human beings do have economic worth. In fact, the whole concept, one of you asked me in Seder, let's see, maybe the difference, but what is nezek? The definition of nezek when it comes to the Adam, you injure a person. Nezek means permanent damage. It's not your loss of the ability to work. So the example that the Gemara gives is it doesn't give this example. If you have someone who's a diamond cutter and you cut his hand off, so there are two things that you pay. You pay nezek and you pay sheves. Sheves is because he can't work. But the sheves you pay is not that he can't work as a diamond cutter. That's the nezek. He used to be, he could cut diamonds. He was very, very valuable. Now he can only be shomer kishum. He can, you know, be a watchman, watches the cucumbers. So the sheves is, right now he can't work at all because he's in such pain and he's on heavy narcotics and so on because you cut his hand off. So right now he's not working at all. So, but if he were working now, he would be working as a cucumber watcher. So therefore, as the shomer kishuim, you pay him the sheves that he can't watch cucumbers. But the value, the fact that he's no longer worth, he's not as economically valuable because he can't cut diamonds anymore, that's calculated as nezek, so that's paid as nezek as opposed to sheves. So human beings definitely have economic value. That's not the question. The question is that their lives, their neshama doesn't have any value, but their economics certainly can have a price placed on it. And how do you figure out a price placed on it?
How would a person be
sold if they were sold as a slave? And that obviously would be much harder to do today. But it's done today also. Unfortunately, there is a lot more slavery in the world than you would realize, even in the shadows of this country. That's rather unfortunate in its own right. But even putting that aside, we do have such a notion, right? In other words, when you have a court case, when someone sues, let's say, over an unjust death or something like that, so there is a value that is an economic value that is placed upon a human being that you would say that the person who's liable would have to pay. So I don't know how, you know, how the accountants, actuaries, whoever else calculated, but they were
consultants.
What?
Consultants,
yeah.
Economic consultants.
Okay, there you go. Well, you need the actuaries at least to have the tables to know how long they would like you to live and work.
Right.
And the economic consultants can use those. Okay, fine. Economic consultants. Fine. And the next paragraph is about the pidyon nafsho shel mumas or shel memes. The mumas being the nisak and the memes being the mazik. Okay, so let's take a look now at the first paragraph.
What?
Yes.
What does it mean?
So, Bekitzer Nimratz. These are, there is an outdated scholarly theory that existed that, step up. There seems to be, the Gemara asserts in a number of places, it's mostly the stem of the Gemara, I think, I don't know if the Amoraim already say it, that there were two different schools of thought on how you darshan. Different midos shatar and drash by hand. The Gemara identifies a very specific difference between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel, whether you darish the Torah as Rabbi Shmuel did b'klal l'prat u'klal, or whether you darish the Torah b'ribui miyot v'ribui. That's the question. And I'm not going to go into the details. If you want to see the classic presentation of that is one of the opening sugyas of Gemara Shavuos. So there is an assumption made that there were two different schools, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael. That's probably, to some extent, true. Our Mishnah, by the way, is a reflection of Rabbi Akiva's school. I don't mean in terms of the Midrash HaTorah and Dreshes Behem, but our Mishnah is essentially Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim. Anybody after the Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yishmael generation is Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim. Rameh, Rabbi Huda, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yosei, Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Nehemiah. And Rebbe was a student of those people, some of those people. So the Mishnah reflects very much the Torah of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Yishmael's Talmidim, if you only learn Mishnah, you will never have heard of it. Amongst his most famous Talmidim, Rabbi Yoshi and Rabbi Yonasan, who appear frequently in Midrashei Halacha, less frequently in the Tosefta. So we don't find them in the Mishnah because there was really Rabbi Yishmael's branch. Okay, that part is whether you can prove it historically that they differed exactly, Klal, Prado, Klal versus Rebu, Mibribu, I don't know, but that's what the Gemara posits, fine. In terms of the Bryce, in terms of the Midrashei Halacha, the collections that we have, so our collections, for the most part, probably date to a generation after the Mishnah when they were redacted. Many of the materials may be earlier, although there are a lot of citations of the Mishnah in the Midrashei Halacha. There are sort of four classic Midrashei Halacha, the Mechilta on Shmos, which is the Mechilta of Rabbi Yishmael, the Sifra, or the Toras Kohanim on Vayikra, the Sifrei Bamidbar, and the Sifrei Dvarim. Early, probably 20th century scholarship, or even 19th century scholarship, suggested that each of these four broke down to split into two schools. The Mechilta was Rabbi Yishmael, the Sifrei Bamidbar was Rabbi Yishmael, whereas the Toras Kohanim, Sifra on Vayikra was Rabbi Akiva, and the Sifrei Dvarim was Rabbi Akiva. However, obviously, where is the Braisa of Rabbi Yishmael, Loma, B'Shloshes, Rabbi Midrash, Satorim, Drashes, Behem? That's the opening passage of Toras Kohanim, although it may just be an appendage to Toras Kohanim. And if you're interested in knowing what all those midos are, for the ones that you don't recognize, if you open up the Toras Kohanim, the very next section, before you really start Vayikra, because that's obviously, it's not really part of Vayikra, somebody just put it there, is actually Ketzad, giving you examples of each of the midos that Toras addresses by him. So whenever somebody asks me, what is the mida, and I actually don't know, I just tell them, go look at it. All right, so that is that's the classic theory. It's probably not true. It's a very simplistic dichotomy. They're the signs one to the other. If you're really interested in Myron McComas, I can give you Myron McComas, not now. I can give you secondary literature that you can go look at what people have to say about it. In fact, I can do better than that. I can tell you the two different volumes that you can look at that will lead you to the secondary literature, because I'll just look at them to give you that information. But that's why this is called Mechilta Rabbi Yishmael. There are a couple of other Midrashei Halacha that were reconstructed. Zukir Sr., told me when I recently quoted one of them that he regards them with great suspicion, understandably so. One of them is the Mechilta de Rashbi of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who was a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva, so it's the other Mechilta. The word Mechilta, by the way, just means measure. A Mesechta could be a Mechilta. It's a measure of Torah. And the Rishonim had the Mechilta de Rashbi. They had another Mechilta. We don't have a manuscript, and I forgot who published the Mechilta de Rashbi. I want to say it was the distinguished professor of Talmud, Yaakov Nachum Epstein. I think he was the one who published the Mechilta de Rashbi, and it was reconstructed from citations, I think, and Rishonim, whatever else, I don't know, whatever else he used. So it is, you have to question to what extent, whether you, or how much authority you want to give that. And I believe Rav David Tzvi Hoffman published another medrash on Dvarim. It's called Medrash Tanoim L'Dvarim. A lot of the material was drawn from another midrashic work called the Medrash HaGadol, in which it was claimed that there was a lot of material of Medrash Tanoim buried.
What's that?
Medrash Tanoim?
Yes.
Rav David Tzvi Hoffman, who was the rector of Hildesheimer Seminary after Rav Hildesheimer, before the Sri Deish. So that's in a nutshell. Kids are Nimrods. Yes. You want to know what if it weren't Kids are Nimrods, what would be? Okay. The Mechilta. Yeah, so the Mechilta of Rabbi Yishmael, again, you never know exactly whether you have Shinim take place, but we have it in manuscript. I don't know I don't know about the Mechilta. We actually, I think one of the, probably the oldest vocalized rabbinic manuscript that we have is the opening of Toras Kohanim, Ksaviat Asimani. I think it's 10th century, and it's vocalized. I believe it's 10th, not 9th, of the beginning of the Sifra. I don't know how the oldest manuscript of the Mechilta is, but we can assume that this Mechilta looks more or less like the Mechilta looked by the time it was first redacted. So again, exactly the same. No, I suspect there aren't any errors. Were more likely unintentional errors. Like the Mishnah doesn't look exactly like the Mishnah when Rebbe published it, and the reason we know I can show you lots of examples, is because it was such a studied and copied work, and people corrected it when they needed to, and other things happened as well. Whereas the Mechilta, like the Tosefta, like the Yerushalmi, were not so heavily studied, so it suffers on the one hand from a lack of manuscript wealth. On the other hand, it suffers less from people amending to correct it because they know what it's supposed to read. So the Mechilta on bar on page 2, B'chi yiftach ish bar laman amar ad shalo yomar yesh libidin ho'il v'hashor mamono v'habor mamono im lamadita shuchayiv al yidei shoro im lamadita shuchayiv al yidei shoro it should be inadin shuchayiv al yidei boro. Okay, there must be an error here. Now, is this a Kal Vachomer?
Yeah.
Maybe. It sounds like Enodin, although it's not clear what the Kal and what the Chomer is. So I mentioned to you a couple of you in Seder, and I'll say, I said this yesterday, Kal Vachomer is a specific kind of Binyan Av. And when we talk about whether you can make a Kal Vachomer or not, like Onshim and Adin, the same thing, it's a Kal Vachomer, if ain't Onshim and Adin, Kal Vachomer ain't onshin min binyan av. How's that? Right. In other words, a kal v'chomer is a stronger than a binyan. It's a strong binyan av. It's when one is kal and one is chomer. A binyan av is when they're shoving, when they're equal in strength. So if it applies by one, it should apply by the other. A kal v'chomer is if it applies, the chomer applies by the kal v'chomer must apply by the chomer. That's the. So when we say in onshin min adin, it means in onshin min binyan av or a kal v'chomer. So then mechilta says lo amrish b'shor shadar.
What's the typo?
Im lamadet hashuchayev al yidei shoro, eino din shuchayev al yidei boro. Eino chayev al boro doesn't make sense here.
Eino din
shuchayev al boro. In other words, the whole point is whole vashar mamono vahabor mamono. Im lamadet hashuchayev al yidei shoro, eino din shuchayev al yidei boro. Now the Gemara says, lo, you can't make a kal v'chomer from shor to bor. Why? Im armis b'shor shedarko leilichul ahazik, and that's why you're chayev. Tomar b'bor shein darko leilichul ahazik. So just a word on this. Why is the fact that shor is darko leilichul ahazik make you chayiv more than a bor, which is inanimate and more importantly immobile? Immobile.
Because you would expect the shor to go out and do things.
And therefore,
more careful with it.
Right. It implies that it requires a greater degree of shmira. And it seems to be. And again, I don't know how much to make of this because at the end of the day, are you chayiv on the zikin because it's mamono hamazik or because it's poshe in the shmira? Well, you're not chayiv on your mamono mazik unless you were poshe in the shmira. I also want to tell you now, I think there may be a third possibility. I don't like this idea of mamono hamazik, but I think poshe in the shmira, and I think there's something else. Okay. I'm launching a rebellion. Yes. Okay. No, I'm just denying the mamono possibility. I think there's something else going on.
Okay.
I'm still trying to formulate it precisely, but when we get to the Gemara on Daf, Dalid Amid Aleph, we'll talk about it then. Okay, so Tomar Bibor Shein Dach Lahas Tamalom Rav Chiv Tach Yishbor Rav Chiv Yishbor Rav Yishol Zachis Yibadin Tzarech HaKasav Laviyu Bifnei Atzim. Since you couldn't learn it from a Kal V'chomer, the Torah had to tell it to you on its own. Davar Acher Rav Chiv Tach Yishbor Rav Chiv Yishbor L'chayav Azeh Bifnei Atzmo L'Azeh Bifnei Atzmo. I'm not exactly sure what this means. I think this is a reflexive comment of the Mechilta whenever you get an O, to tell you that you're chayav on each one. In certain cases, for example, utvacho o mecharo. I didn't look to see what the mechilta has there, but when you steal somebody's ox, you do not have to both slaughter it and then sell it in order to be chayav da'al v'hei. It's utvacho o mecharo. It wouldn't surprise me if the mechilta said on that, l'chayav al zeh b'fnei atzmo zeh b'fnei atzmo. I just say, oh, because that said utvacho o mecharo. Note, by the way, also, I don't know that it's true about the word o, but the letter vav, the conjunctive vav, in Tanakh and in rabbinic literature can be conjunctive or not. In other words, it can be and or it can be or. There are many cases in rabbinic literature, most of them are obvious. When we say, I'll give you actually a classic one where the Kisvei Yad actually solved the problem. What do you pay on for Tavach al Machar? Steel and Tavach al Machar, what do you pay?
Dalad Vehe.
Dalad Vehe. You don't pay 9. The Gemara has a whole series of drushes about this, actually. You pay 4 or you pay 5. Interestingly enough, if you look in Ksav Yad Kafel, which is the oldest vocalized manuscript of the Mishnah, throughout Bava Kama, it always says Dalet Vehe. Except for when you start to look really closely, you realize that the V wasn't there originally, and it was the hand of a later scribe. There happened to be 5 different scribes in Ksav Yad Kafel. This I have from Professor Moshe Barasher. But you can see when something was added later. And consistently, it was originally Dalet Hey, and later somebody put in the Vav. You can see it. So bottom line is, Dalet Vehey, which is the usual presentation, means four or five. So it's very, there are numerous examples. But O is usually, I don't know that O would ever mean and. Okay, so Dabarach, Chiyivtachish, Ein Leila Poseach, Koreminai, and Talma Lomar, O Kiyichreish, Achelomer Yeshli Bidin, Ima Poseach, Iva Korla Koshokain, Ha, Ima Marta Kain, Onashle Minadin, Lakach Nemar, O Chiyichre, Lamechash, Ein Onshe Minadin. Now, we mentioned this yesterday in Shir, but you realize that there's immediately a stira between this line and the beginning of the paragraph. What did the beginning of the paragraph assume? The opening line of the paragraph, they tried learning Bor from Shor, and they said you can't because the Kal v'Chomer doesn't work, because it's a Chomer v'Kal. What do you see from the opening paragraph of this, opening line of this paragraph? Onshin and Adin. Now you see, because they were trying to, exactly what Tosfos was pointing out in the Mishnah, the fact that the Mishnah said Lo Harei, implying that if it weren't for the non-Shava characteristics, you could have learned Mave from Shor, or Shor from Mave, shows you Onshin and Adin, as does the opening line in Mechilta. Tosfos points out this line in Mechilta says explicitly Onshin and Adin. So this is, by the way, not a surprise. Not a surprise that you're a steer within the Mechilta. Sometimes steers in the Mechilta are so subtle, you don't even realize there's a steer. I'm not going to explain what it is. Any of you who took intro with me will know this. The Mechilta on Im Shlash Eila Layasala, the Yatzachidam in Kasef, there are two paragraphs in the Mechilta back to back, and you don't realize that they're actually arguing on one another on what Im Shlash Eila means. Because the first paragraph explicitly asks, what is Shlash Eila? Sher Ksus Fa'ona? Or Yiyud, Pidyon, and I forget what the third is, Yiyud Lo, Pidyon. And then the second paragraph doesn't tell you it's arguing what Shlash Eila refers to, but it actually takes the opposite tack. So you don't even realize. And so much so that the Targum Yonah San Ala Torah put both interpretations into one pasuk, because the author didn't realize that the Mechilta's two paragraphs contradict one another. So that's not surprising, although the Mechilta could contradict, you know, each one is a separate thing. But now I would ask you the following question for very brief thought. Is there a way of resolving the stira? I'm not interested actually in resolving the stira. I'm perfectly fine with the stira. But is there a way of explaining why there's no contradiction? So let me ask you, is that?
Maybe this is the difference between like a practical application and a conceptual application.
No, they're both practical, right? In other words, in the first one, the Mechilta said, if the Torah had said Shor, initially it thought, I could have learned Bor, that you'd be chayav on Niske Bar Meon. That's practical. And the second one, same also, if the Torah said Ki Yiftach, I would know it's a Kal V'Chomer, you're chayav on Ki Yichra. That's you.
Maybe you could say it's not Onesh, it's Mamon.
Mechilta said, Ein... Okay, it didn't say the words Mamon there. So Ben Sion is definitely on the right track. I'll let you go further. What you said is 100% correct, possibly. I'm not sure it's right. It's what I'm thinking. But what do you mean by that? We're talking about Mamon here, aren't we?
We said ain't ownership and it didn't, so it could be either that the Torah punishes you to pay the person back, or that you just have some obligation that the Torah makes you restore the value of the person, not as a punishment.
But then there is a machlokas, according to what you're saying. It's a machlokas on how to view Tashlumen.
Yes.
I'm not saying that. So I'm going to take that a step further and ask the question, but it doesn't really work here. Is it possible that there are different kinds of dinei mamonos? Some of them are considered tashlumin, and some of them are considered onesh. So on the surface, of course, the answer to that question is, of course that's true. Of course it's true that there's certain kinds of financial payments that are considered onesh. Give me an example.
Well,
I don't want... Yes, the way Chazal treated, but that's not actually true. One could argue that's not an onesh, that's just a shorthand. The Torah said, just use this amount.
Dalavei.
Almost every other knas, within the category. Kefel, right? The Chamishim Kesef of Nara, the way Chazal understand that that's a knas separate from Boshes, Nesek, Tsar, and so on, for rapist and so on. So, in other words, it's possible. So there certainly do seem to be, Chazal have two categories, knas and mamon. The question is whether or not. So I have a suspicion. It wouldn't shock me to find a claim. I don't know if it ever comes up that you cannot assess knas from a Kal V'Chomer.
that that's called an onesh. I don't know if it ever comes up. But clearly these are both examples of what we classically think of as mamam. We think of nizikin, most nizikin outside the chatzi nezek of a tam, which is a machlokas, but all other nizikin is considered mamam, not kanas. But the question is there a way to be mechalik within two different kinds of mamanos, where one is treated as onesh and one of them is treated as just tashlumin? I'll leave out the word, but I don't want to use mamon, but I don't know that it's going to work here, because if anything, which is the bigger chiddush to have learned from a kal v'chomer? Shor to bor or yiftach to yichra? Which is the easier kal v'chomer to make? Yeah, because it's basically the same thing. In other words, you made a pit. In one case, you just uncovered it. The other case, you dug it. But the other case, shor to bor is a much bigger leap. And yet in the Mechilta, they're willing to make the shor to bor, except for that the kal v'chomer didn't work out. Whereas where the Mechilta at least quotes an opinion that objects to onesh menatin, it's by the case that's a much shorter leap. Right? So, in other words, I don't know if I mentioned this here, I mentioned this recently somewhere. You know, the Gemara will say, kra laman li svarahi. You can't use that to invent a din d'oraisa. You can use it when you already have certain structures and you're trying to define certain things, so maybe you don't need a pasuk for something because the svara can be powerful enough. But you can't create a din out of nowhere to say we make a new mitzvah because kra lama li svarahi, our 614 mitzvahs, the 613 that are written in scripture and the one that I've come up with svara. You can't do that. Right? So in our terms, learning shor, bor from shor is a big leap. Learning yichra from yiftach, you know, that's kind of... Yes, get your...
It's not the size of the leap, it's the quality of the leap. It's learning an entirely new form of nezek, as opposed to... You know, let me give you another sort of distinction about yiftach and yichra will work better. There are two kinds of kal v'chomers that you will find in the rabbinic literature. The classic kal v'chomer you know, but the following is a very strange kal v'chomer, of which I still puzzle to every moment why ain't onshim in hadin. Does the Torah say that you chayiv kares for sleeping with your sister? And I'll say this, I think it would be true if any of you have a sister. Does the Torah say that you chayiv for sleeping with your sister? Yeah?
No.
What does it say? In fact, this week's parasha, it's repeated in the Arurs. It doesn't say, okay, all of you, many of you have sisters. It doesn't say anything about sleeping with your sisters. No. Arur shochev machoso, bas aviv, ovasimo. I know. I mean, I should be careful. I don't think maybe there are, but if you don't have a half sister, pasuk doesn't apply to you. In Parshas Achrimos, it's the same thing. It only speaks about achoscha vasavicha ovasimecha.
Does basaviv not apply to your full sister?
So you're asking. The answer is no, it doesn't, because then you wouldn't call her basavicha. But you would have said you would. Yes, Jesse. What does the Torah, does it talk about a full sister in the Torah? The answer is no. It says, Vasachmicha or Vasinecha. Vasachmicha means your half sister from the father. Vasinecha means your half sister from the mother.
But that's the inclusive of.
No. It's an or.
What did it have said?
What if it's an
or? Sorry.
Wait a second. Why does it have to mean your half sister?
It's inclusive of, it means you just, you can't.
What I'm telling you is Chazal understood, and it's probably shot. Vasavicha means
just your
half sister. Only for the father. Bas imecha, you wouldn't call it. You would just call it achoska.
It's being inclusive, though. If it said achoska, you might think, oh, she's not my full sister.
It doesn't say arvas achoska lo sigale. It says arvas achoska vas avicha o vas imecha. There are only two things in that pasuk. Achoska vas avicha or vas imecha. The achoska is distributed. This is not my own chiddush here. The Gemara says... The Gemara learns that from some type of riboy or something to include a full sister. Now, I would have asked you, I know you're having trouble wrapping your mind around it, I always have it also. This is a specific kind of kal v'chomer which you can't make. It's called the Yish B'chlam Masai Mana kal v'chomer. Right. It's, in other words, this is a kal v'chomer where A actually includes B. It's not that A is stronger than B. B is actually subsumed within A. Because a full sister is a half-sister from the father and a half-sister from the mother put together. A full sister, right? Half plus a half equals one. So the Gemara says you need a special ribui. You can't learn from a kavachomer, even though it's a yesh b'chlal masayim mana. So Yair, if I wanted to argue yiftach and yichra, shor and bor, even if it's a kavachomer, is not a yesh b'chlal masayim mana. But yiftach and yichra is pretty close to a yesh b'chlal masayim mana. It's a qualitative different kavachomer. Still, we say no shemin adin here, and as we do by a choscha. Okay, it is what it is. Okay, continue.
Can we explain this
to you? No, it's just a machlokas adeus. I'm not offering an interpretation other than to throw out the possibility that we have to consider. You know, one of the questions that you have to put on the top of your head as we read every Gemara, is what, you know, is there different kinds of mamonos? And could it have been possible that Eino Shemin did? Tosfos assumes it's a machlokas. The best I can say is the machlokas, but I kind of wonder, what does it mean onesh by mamonos? When we say ain't onshim and aden, it's not an onesh. We don't normally think of it as an onesh. Right? Mis is an onesh. Malchus is an onesh. Because it was Michal Shabbos, the death penalty is not a compensation in any form. Right? It's not an act of compensatory justice. It's exeris akasim. It's a punishment. Malchus is the same thing. But mamon, we call it tashlume nisko. Tashlume nesa.
I don't really see a steer in the Megillah. I just think in the first case it says, why does it say both? It doesn't want to say Eino Shemin Adin. It doesn't want to say that. Rather, it says this because that's like a big Kiddush, and therefore it says.
Fine. Okay.
And afterwards, there's no way that we should so easily learn one from the other. It's so easy to learn one from the other.
So you know, it makes the first line exceedingly misleading. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
You're saying that the Gemara, the Mechilta, could have had what's called the Lita Amech. In other words, and even according to you, that the Kavachomer might work as a Kavachomer, Eino Shemin Adin.
Yeah.
Right, but they gave this answer, so they don't need to give the other.
Yeah.
Okay. Fine. That's a last resort teretz. Then maybe you'll say, Machlokas is a last resort teretz. Dabar acher, ki yiftach ish bor hikish poseach lekore, dekore leposeach, ma poseach b'shus pater, af kore b'shus pater. So they basically follow the same set of rules in terms of if you dig a bor with permission, you're not chayiv. Same thing if you open a bor with permission. You know, it's not illicit. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseir Omer lo re poseach re kor le kor re poseach atzad hashav Hashem kol shu chayiv b'shamro chayiv b'nisko af kol shu chayiv b'shamro chayiv b'nisko ein li yada poseach v'kore tziro v'kiro v'sida v'asa v'masa v'nayin talma lomar v'lo yechasena. Holo psicha gorim, velo kira gorim, ela kisa gorim. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, in a very extensive language, seems to be placing the emphasis that what is the crucial nakuda here? In one word?
Covering.
Or another word? More generic? Shmira. You're correct. The shmira of a bar is covering it properly. There's another way of being shomer bar. It's not exactly being shomer bar. What's that?
Filling it in.
But it's not a bar anymore. So.
What if you fence it off? Does that count?
That's a cover. It's as opposed to a horizontal cover, it's a vertical cover.
Covering meaning nullifying.
Removing access to the opening of the bar. Okay. Lo yichasenu lahavi shomer chinam. Again, we spoke about that. Davar acher lo yichasenu shlo kisa karoi mikan amru kisel karoi potu shlo karoi chayiv. Kisel vigilo acher hamagala chayiv. If you cover the bar after you dug it even, and someone else uncovers it, they're chayiv. They in effect become the bal habor. Hashutrim shekisu es habor v'gilau echad mehem hamagal chayiv. Partners, one of them will be chayiv. Nisgala v'yadav echad mehem, if it was uncovered, however, because the wind or somebody else took it off and one of them knew about it, zeshiyadav chayiv es hashalabo patah. This is very interesting. Why is this really interesting? Well, that's the principle here. But what's more interesting about it is that you didn't do anything here. In other words, you left the bor properly covered. Someone came and uncovered it, and you saw it. So let me ask you a question. Let's say somebody dug a bor in the Rishus HaRabim. Let's say a meteorite dug a bor in the Rishus HaRabim. Okay, well, actually, right, let's say it's, and now I come pass by, and I see it, and I don't cover it. Am I chayiv? No. Why? Because I didn't dig the bor. And now, let's say I did dig the bor, but I covered it properly, and someone comes and uncovers it, so that person's liable. But the Mechilta claims that if I know about it, I don't know, we don't know how it got uncovered, but I know about it, I don't cover it, so then I'm liable.
So why am I liable? The answer is because it's still my bar, apparently. If I filled in the bar with dirt after I dug it and someone came and removed the dirt and now I saw it and didn't cover it, would I be chayev? Why not?
Not your bar.
Not my bar anymore. The shame bar was undone. Now, I'm going to ask one other question which we're not going to answer. Let's say a person, I don't even know for sure the answer to this question, but I think I know what the mechilta might hold. I'm not sure. Let's say I dug a bar and then I dug a bore and then I covered it. And then someone else uncovered it. Their identity is either known or not known. And then I pass by and I don't cover the bore. Who's chayev? If we know both people?
What was it again?
Both people.
Both people. So it's a 50-50 split. What if we don't know who uncovered it?
You're chayev 50%.
And the other 50? So there's a sugya later. Rabbi Berman referred to it, actually. There's a whole discussion of Machlokas HaTanaim, Rabbi Nassim. Contemporary ambulance-chasing lawyers would love this. I hope none of your fathers are an ambulance-chasing lawyer. I'm not a fan of ambulance-chasing lawyers, but... So I know there are a few lawyers here, but I don't think fathers are lawyers, but I don't think they're ambulance chasers. Rabbi Nassim says, Kol hecha d'lecha l'shtalu m'mehai, m'shtalu m'mehai. They talk about the case where a bore ashore pushed somebody, or pushed another shore, into a bore. So the question is, who pays the bala shore or the bala bore? And the answer is they might split. But what happens if the shore was a shore tam, where it only pays chatzi nezek? So the shore tam only pays a quarter, because he's responsible half the damage. What does the bala bore pay? So it appears to be a machlokas, whether he pays half, and the nisak loses a quarter, or whether he can collect three quarters. The Rebbe referred to this, but the Gemara says, the reason why he can collect three quarters, I think according to Nassim, is Torah bebirach ashkachtai. I found my shore in the bottom of your pit. So that's the, you know, American legal system, from what I understand, as it's practiced, doesn't believe in partial liability. It only believes in partial liability if it can collect from both parties. But if you can't, then you always go after the deep pockets, right? Which doesn't seem to be just in a certain sense, that if you're responsible for half the nesek, you should pay half the nesek, not all of the nesek. But then there might be a theory in the Gemara that doesn't agree with that. Yes, sir.
I know we're not ready to resolve this now, but I would make the argument that it should be fully liable. Because I think the idea is everyone's fully liable. If there are two people that are fully liable, they should...
So that's one of the lashonos in the Gemara, I think, from Nassim, is that each one is considered having done the entire nesek. Absolutely correct. The Gemara has two lashonos as to how it works. We're thinking about the other one. If each one only did a half... Yet, Rav Nassim says that you could collect three quarters. That's what's difficult. What you said is 1,000% correct. One lashon of the Gemara, right? That's not the Chiddush. The Chiddush is in the other one. Good.
If you look at it as opposed to an onesh as like kind of like a mamon repayment, then instead of looking at it from the market's perspective, you look at it from the Nisak's perspective, then he's owed.
It's true, but you still have to part. The Nisak is Nisak. We would like to see compensated, but by the responsible parties. So that's Zev's point. If you're saying that both are responsible for 100%, and normally they split half and half, but kol hecha d'lecha l'shtalu m'mehai, I agree, that's 100% true. The bigger chiddush is what happens if you hold that, no, hai pal geniska avad v'hai pal geniska avad, they each only really did a half.
Why can't, in the case of the shore and the pit, why can't you apply the same logic?
No, that's what we're that's the case I'm talking about. So that's where the Gemara says it. So you want to say, in this case, each one is 100% responsible.
I would certainly, in this case, with the uncovering, each one's 100% responsible.
But if
we know both, then we're not going to pay double. That doesn't make sense.
No, agreed.
But we only know one party, you should pay in full, because he's fully responsible.
Right, but I'm going to ask the question, so that's interesting, you think that the guy who didn't simply passively, okay, fine.
He was one of the original diggers.
Right, okay, fine.
It's open.
Okay, fair enough.
So, isn't there a steer in this line also, on the previous line?
Well, obviously, what Tosa says on Beis Avad Aleph, is that he can ignore the Mechilta because there are other Lashonis in the Mechilta and the Gemara. Why the Torah has to say ki yichra if it said ki yiftach?
No. But ki so vi ki lo acher hamagala chayev. So why isn't the magala chayev in the case of Shutfen?
He is chayev in the case of Shutfen.
No, if the skala vi yodavo echem neham.
Right, because now he had an obligation to cover it. And he knew about it and didn't do it.
The original owner of the pit has an obligation to cover it?
Yeah, that was the point that we made earlier, which
is... But
it's
not a pit anymore.
No, not filled it in. Covered it.
Covered
it. That's the point. Okay.
So what's... So... Kisov v'gilo acher... But only, that's only talking about in the case where the Baal didn't...
Doesn't find out about it, correct.
Uh-huh.
Correct. I'm inclined to think that Zev is probably correct in this case. That this theory would be, you know, the mere fact that they're both, that the guy who saw it can be chayiv, and it doesn't sound like he's chayiv only half, and it could be a case, in other words, the language was, where was the law, hold on. Nisgala v'yada bo'echa mehem. So the question, the important question, which is not clear, is nisgala memela, or nisgala just means we don't know who did it. Right? So it's not 100% clear you're correct. In other words, if the wind uncovered it, so the wind isn't chayiv to anybody anything. So then you're the person who sees it, and you're chayiv. In other words, you could argue because it was a natural process, it's still a continuation of your bar. But what if somebody else was poseach b'yadayim? And didn't cover it, and you pass by, you don't cover it. Maybe that person's now the Baal Habor, and you're not anymore. Not so simple, because you know that the Shut, right, it's all complicated. I'm not here to solve it right now, but that's a very important sugya that I would like to deal with at some point during the year, which is assessment of percentages of responsibility and the implications for the Zikin. We'd be remiss if we don't deal with that at some point. Okay. Again, that has to be reflexive. Just an O, a response to the Torah saying O. Right? Because you would have thought that you're only chayev if both an ox and a donkey fall into the bar. Right? Really? Doesn't seem likely. So it's reflexive. Shor velo shor v'kelav, chamor velo chamor v'kelav. So there's a tour here, strangely enough to our minds, that the kelim on that are on a shor or on a chamor that fall in, you are pateron. It's a gzeres hakosef. The Bavli's drush is chamor v'shor v'lo kelim shor v'lo adam chamor v'lo kelim. That you are pateron misas adam. Don't pay kofar. Or any other form of compensation. Fine. Kesef yashiv levalav. Skip to the next paragraph. Ainli ala kesef v'hema minayin harei atadon nemar kan v'hamesi elo v'nemar lahan v'hamesi elo ma'alahan v'hema afkan v'hema makan kesef aflalan kesef. So there are actually three forms, meitav, kesef, and v'hema. Finally, v'hamesi elo l'nisak. Ata omer l'nisak o ainla l'mazik. Amris ilu kein haya. It should be, the Bavli has lo kein haya. What does that mean? Ma'atam alomar v'hamesi elo l'nisak. Alamagit yishamin d'meni v'elaso menakamo d'meni yisko. So how did the Gemara know? How did the Gemara know that the Nizak keeps the Nevela? By the way, who cares? Who cares whether the Nizak gets the Nevela and you pay him the compensation? If you have to pay the Nizak, how could you pay him? Let's say that the Nezak was $100. The Nevela is worth $50. So what's the Chiddush in the Torah of saying that Mesi Elot belongs to the Nizak? And if it belonged to the Mazik, what could the Mazik do?
Give it back.
He could pay $50 from his pocket and give him the Nevela as the other 50. Because all Metalkalim are Metav. In fact, he could find another Nevela. He could find another Nevela and pay him two Nevelas, each worth 50. So why does it even matter that we say that the Nevela belongs to the Nizak? Minaf Kamina. Pachas Nevela is what they talk about. If the Nevela goes down in price in the interim, if you left, then whose loss is that? So the halacha is the main, it's the Nizak's. How did the Mechilta know this? So the way the Mefarshim explains, not entirely convincing, is why do we say Lo Chein Haya? Because if the assumption is Shalem Yishalem Shor Tachas Ashor, or Balabar Kesef Yashiv Olav is the full value. If you're paying back the full value, why does the Torah have to say Vamesi Elo? You would have thought that you have to pay back the full value of that which you damaged, and then the Nevela would belong to the Nizak anyway? That makes no sense. Right? So obviously, this is not so obvious, but the assumption is that you pay back whatever the difference is, Tashlumei Nisko,
And then, Hamesielo, because you didn't pay back the full thing. That's not, I'm not sure exactly why that's so mokrach, but anyway, we'll leave it aside for the moment. That's the din of Pachas Nevela is to the Nizak. Yeah, here.
How does the Mechilton know that it doesn't go to the Masek?
That's what I was just trying to explain, not very well. Not doing a very good job of it, yeah. When we do the sugya, hopefully we'll get there in the first parak. I think it's on Daf Yud, so we'll talk about it then. All right. I'm not interested in Mechayigov. I mean, I'm very interested, but not now. All right. Umacha ruas ashor hachai v'chatzuas kaspo. I think that this is a wonderful mechilta, which is yacho b'shavim nakasam medaber einu ala b'shavim v'chainam shavim. So the truth is, it is medaber only b'shavim. Two oxen worth the same thing. Why can it not be with oxen not worth the same thing? So it's very simple. Supposing one ox is worth $100, and it gores an ox which is worth $1,000. Now the nevela of the $1,000 nevela is worth $500. So if you were to follow the Torah's prescription of justice, how would you divide up the money? $100 ox gores a $1,000 ox. A $2,000 ox, which is now worth, I just wanted to keep the math simple, a $1,500 ox. That's now worth, I guess it doesn't really matter. Fine, $100 ox goes to $1,000 ox. The $1,000 ox is now worth $500. Okay, how would you work out the arrangement here?
Split both,
which means how much does the Nizek wind up with in the end?
300.
How much does the Mazik wind up with?
300.
And this violates the general principle known as Shelo Yehei Chotei Niskar. It should be rewarded for sinning. So that would be a moral perversion. That, by the way, it would be a din worthy of Sodom. That could have fit perfectly into the Agados of Sodom.
Hammurabi.
No. Hammurabi is not. Not quite that. But it would have fit perfectly into the Agados of Sodom. The story goes that they decided that someone who has one ox has to graze everybody's oxen one day. Anybody who has no oxen has to graze everybody's ox in 2 days. So there was this Yasson who had no oxen, so they wanted to make him graze 2 days. So he went and he slaughtered all the oxen and said, he basically wanted to keep two oxen. He said, anybody who contributed one ox gets one ox. Everybody who contributed no oxen, he gets to keep two oxen. So that's called Midas Sedel in multiple ways. So this would be Roy for the Sedel. Okay, so that's why the Mechilta says, Ma derech hamazikin, Amrus, Ma derech hamazikin, Niskarna masidin, Haveim or masidin, so Acha derech hanizakin, Nolten niskan, or yes or on niskan, Haveim or niskan, Velo yos or on niskan. So, I'm not sure how that line should be read, but bottom line is, you only apply the chatzu as kaspo, the damas neis hachatzun, when the two oxen are worth the same amount of money. Then, half and half will always work out. Okay. On the top line, Velo Yishmeru Lahavi Shomer Chinam. The Chilta was really into that. Okay, so let's take a look at the Parsha Yadala finally. Kiyadar Yisrael, Lomanema, Achimel Yomar, Hayali Bidin, Hoel Haber Mamono, Veha Heber Mamono. Now, down here, by the way, what is the word for kiyaver isadeh cherem, which the Mechilta clearly understands is what? Which of the avos mezikin is this?
Shame.
So notice what it says. Ho v'haber mamono, v'hahever mamono. Right? What's odd about this? What is hever?
Fire.
Eish. Yeah. So why did they choose this language? It almost again has the echoes of the pasuk being read as fire rather than being read as shame v'rega. But that's not how the Mechilta actually understood it. It's clear understood it as shame. Im lamadet al haber shuchayv lo yechayv al habeiro im zachisi min adin ma tal melomar ki aper ish el haba akosta lamedcha shashem u'edes lecha l'roayla v'habehima mu'edes lishvar v'derech ilucha. So they don't explain what's wrong with the Kal Vachomer. It makes it sound like the Torah is teaching you here a special din,
that a shein is mu'adas lachal as a roila, and a behemah is mu'adas shabba b'derech chiducha. Mikan amru la'olam enu chayv at sheyetzi amasik mershuso v'hizim. So this would be actually what the Bavli says. That shein v'regel, the reason why the Torah had to tell us shein v'regel, even though we could have learned it from a benyanab kavachomer, was because tepat lepotro v'shus harabim. All right. Sheshamin nezakin v'idis v'kavachomer lehechdesh. Does anybody know what that means? Well, you know what the first line means. Sheshamin nezakin v'idis. Means what?
You pay for the best.
When you pay for Nezek, you pay for the best quality bag. What is Kavachomer Lehekdesh? That is the sugya starting on Zayin Amud Beis. Techesanah, one of the issues the Gemara struggles with when it discusses Meitav. So we'll leave it until then. Vinciam?
If you are paying to Hekdesh.
So the Gemara raises that possibility. It even seems to be the pshat in the Yerushalmi, I think. But not in the Bavli. That if you owe money to Hekdesh, that you... That you have to pay in Yiddish. When you normally owe somebody a money, what do you have to pay?
What is Valchov Dino?
The Beinonis. So if you want to say that Hekdesh, you have to pay Yiddish, okay. You can't clearly, what can't you say? You can't say that when you do Nesek to Hekdesh, you have to pay in Yiddish. You know why? When you do Nesek to Hekdesh, what do you pay? At least Mamono Hamasek, for sure. Zero.
What is that?
Hekdesh has property, and your ox goes wild and gore and damages. So, except for Adam Hamazik, which is not entirely clear, all Mamono Hamazik is potter by Hekdesh. It's a binyanah basically learned from Shor. You go Shor Yisra Shor in Eir Rabbeis.
So how are you punished for damaging someone else's hektesh?
Well, hektesh, not someone else's. The answer is you're not. It's life. It's like lightning struck the hektesh animal. Hektesh's animal damages you, hektesh is also potter.
But something is still owed to someone. The hektesh was still set aside.
I understand, but it's dead, so there's nothing you can do. You mean someone else has to bring a carbon? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, like...
So you're going to... You have to deal with the question of Davar Hagorim Lamamu Kamamu Dami. This is a sugya in Perek Meruba that talks about... Aganav. They don't talk about... Let us say you steal. That's a different question, technically. The question is the following. I'm only chayv kefal odal vehei if I steal your animal. What if I steal your carbon? Is your carbon? No, it's God's. So there is a shita is that Rabbi Shimon claims that if you're going to kachim shechai b'achwayusa, those are two kinds of kachim you can have. One is you say harei alai to bring a karban, and then you take an animal you set aside as that karban. That's called a neda. A nedava is when you say harei zo, this animal is consecrated as an olam. What's the nafkamina between the two? Says the Mishnah in Kinim and in Megillah. What's the nafkamina between a neder and a nedava?
You lose it.
If you lose it, whether you chai b'achriyusa or not, if something happens to it. So Rabbi Shimon claims that if I steal someone's behema with a chai b'achriyus, meaning be set aside after they took a neder, then I'm chai to pay kefid al behei, because davar hagon in the moment, I think it's davar hagon kamamo dami, and since it costs you money, it's like you own that shor, even though you don't, because it belongs to Hekdesh.
So but reimbursing the financial damage that you did to someone.
To that person. But if Hekdesh has an animal, belongs to Hekdesh. Someone gave it to Hekdesh. Not a, as an adava, in effect. Carbon, not a carbon. Let's say Darbetic Abayas. And your animal damages or your board damages that animal, you pot that.
Because it's a Jairus HaKasim. It doesn't exist as property of a human being.
It's a Jairus HaKasim. Hekdesh's property has value in many economic contexts and is treated as property in most economic contexts. But when it comes to Nezek and certain other kinds of punishments, penalties, whatever else, it just doesn't apply to Hekdesh. There's no kefal dal behei by something of Hekdesh. There are all sorts of things in Dinei Mamonos that just don't apply to you.
So that person's just out of korban.
Yeah, he just won't get the. If he was a korban lamizbeach and was in a daba, that's life. God won't get the korban. God will have to fast.
Do you need witnesses to make something hektesh?
What's that?
You need like witnesses.
No.
So why can't anyone claim? I guess they could just be dishonest.
Now what?
What's the point? It wasn't hektesh. Good. That's a misunderstanding.
They could lie. It's true. Firstly, I think typically the hekdesh we're talking about is not a private Jewish hekdesh. It's actually hekdesh of a kabayis.
Okay.
But that's always a question.
Right.
That's always a question. We don't. In other words, all pretty much of all the bavas all essentially deal with situations where we know what the facts are. And we're trying to decide the law. I mean, there are a few cases where you know we're not sure which atzko, which atzko. For the most part, almost all of Nezikin is predicated on a discussion of we know what the facts are and we want to know what the law is. Sanhedrin is often about figuring out figuring out what the law is.
Right.
Next. I'm sorry, let me just read the last part. And again, I ask you, what's the chiddush in that? You would have thought what? That you're only chayiv if your shor eats both a vineyard and a field? So the pashtus is it's just a reflexive comment in the mechilta whenever you have an O. Okay. Next, v'shilachas v'yirom yikan amru masar tzono levno v'shlucho la'avdo patu l'cheir shod v'til katan chayiv. So why are you chayiv when you hand it over to b'no shlucho la'avdo? Now this just requires a little bit of thought. Why are you chayiv?
I'm sorry, why are you pater?
Why are you pater? So, well, who is Beno here? You have to say Beno is a gadol, I think. If you hand it over to a bardas, who has liability if they don't watch it, and they don't watch it properly, you're pater, they're chayiv. A, don't have liability. B, are not responsible. And therefore, you're chayiv. From a conceptual perspective, what's the difference? Why are you chayiv on chereshot of a katan and you're not chayiv on b'no avdo and shlucha? Avdo is the most interesting one here, but yeah.
There's no transition of the property?
Excellent. Right. In other words, they're not shomer, not just because they're not incompetent shomer. There's no transfer of the property. The chereshot and the katan are b'nei kinyan. And therefore, if what makes you a part of what comes along with the process of shomer is that the shomer is kone, so it's a little bit like momono, and now he's responsible, well, that doesn't happen by shomer, by chereshot and katan. In other words, it's not considered shmira. I don't mean factual. I mean conceptually, there's no chalos shem shomer on the chereshot and katan. Whereas b'no avdo and shlucho can have. Now, the only one that's interesting about b'no avdo and shlucho, by the way, is... Yeah.
No.
Is avdo. Why is avdo interesting?
Because you're eved full. Not full member.
Your agent.
Your eved. There can be a kinyan with your eved.
Asha kana eved. Kana rabba. So when you give it to your eved...
It's still yours.
Right, in the full sense of the word. So I'll tell you why that maybe is not true. I'll tell you why that's not truly true. Does an Evan have liability? Is it that an Evan has liability but he can't afford to pay, or an Evan has no liability? What's the din? Some of you might have seen the Gemara Dalet Amud Aleph about that's a fascinating sugya that I'm going to skip over now, but eventually we're going to do. About what happens if your Evan or Amma does damage. Are you liable for it? It was a debate, famous debate. Did you see that part of the email? You didn't get that.
Yeah, we got
that. So who said, who was the debate between?
Well, everyone said that you were Pater, the question was why. At least the two positions we saw in Dot Dalet. Or at least if I understood them correctly.
No. Who were the two parties involved?
The Rav Ashi and then we're talking about something different.
We are, same okay. Gemara. There was a machlokas between the Sadducees and the Pharisees. It's recorded in the Mishnah in Yadayim, in that the last few Mishnahs in Yadayim record several debates between the Tzdukim and the Prushim. Each side would say, Kovlim Anu Alechem Tzdukim, we complain against you, O Sadducees. Actually, that's the first one. Kovlim Anu Alechem Prushim. So, the Tzdukim complained
to the Prushim and said, Kol v'n alechem tzdukim, a Prushim, sh'atam omrim avdi v'shori shehizik amchayim, but avdi v'amasi apata. Why is it that I'm chayav when my shor and my chamor do damage, but what, according to you, O Pharisees, but when my Eved or my Amma are doing it, it's pata.
Yes.
So that is what I think actually the Mishnah really holds. I believe there's a later addition to the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, all right. Kol v'man alechem prushim ma'im shori v'chamori she'eni chayev v'hem mitzvah sareni chayev v'nisgan avi l'masi sh'ani chayev v'mitzvah in adin she'e chayev v'nisgan. Amr lehem lo amartem b'shori v'chamori she'en b'ndaz tomer v'eved rama she'esh b'ndaz she'imach nitenu yelech v'yad l'kedisho shal acher v'ahe chayev l'sham. I believe that I cannot prove it, that the line, which is found very similar to what's in our Gemara, what they said, what did the Tzedukim, what did the Prushim respond to the Tzedukim? How can you say, you can't ask me a question from my Shor HaChamor that had no Da'as, to an Eved Ha'amah who had Da'as, and if I incite them, they'll go burn down somebody's haystack and I'll have to pay. The way the Babli says, if the Nim says, that every day they'll burn down another house, I'll have to pay them on. I believe that line, She'imach Nitenu, is a later addition to the Mishnah on the basis of our Gemara, but which we will explain when we do the Sugya of Iyun, not when we go through it, you know, next week, because we're just trying to get the issue of Ma'amah. But what do I think, why is it that your potter, when your Eved and Amah do damage, is the real reason? Because they're chayim. But an Eved and Amah can't pay. So the Mishnah in Perek HaChovah says that Eved b'isha kigiyasan ra. Heim shechavl achovlim achovol b'hem chayiv. But heim shechavl b'achayim are pechurim. In other words, if you wound an Eved or an Isha, you have to pay to the husband or the owner. If an Eved or Isha wounds a person, they don't pay. You know why they don't pay? Well, the Mishnah says, nisgar she Isha nishtachar Eved, they have to pay. That is contrasted with the Mishnah that says, chere shota v'katan kigiyasan ra. What happens if the katan becomes a gadol? What's the din?
Pater.
What happens if the bidei adam? Certainly. What happens if the chayrish is this takeach? Got better? Pater. What if nishtape hashote, the shote got better? Pater. Why? Because one of them are bnei das bnei chayuva, but they don't have the money to pay, so you always have to pay whenever you get the money. The other ones are not b'nei chayuv at all.
So he becomes chayuv when he's free?
The Eved becomes, he is chayuv now, he can't afford to pay. When he gets free, he's chayuv. I presume if someone gave the Eved money, if that's possible, for those who it's possible, he'd have to pay them. Yeah?
How would the Eved have money to pay for an infraction like that? As the second he comes out of slavery.
It doesn't mean that. It means as soon as he comes out and acquires assets, he's liable.
Uh-huh. We're not just taking people out of slavery to
no,
the meth game.
Nope, that wouldn't be. That wouldn't be the case. Okay, so anyway, so the difference, fundamentally, the difference between Chayr Shot and Katan versus Avdo, which again, it might even be an Eved Kanani, because an Eved Kanani is a Bardas and a Bar Chiyuv. He just can't afford to pay. So it could be that for three of them, the Chayr Shot and Katan for one bunch, there's no din of shmira here. Because there's no kinyan, because there's no das. In the other case, there is a din of shmira. So if I hand it over to someone who's a bar chayuva, they're chayiv. If I hand it over to someone who's not, I'm chayiv. Either because they're not bar chayuva, or more likely because it's not shmira. There's a very loosely parallel concept. There's a Gemara that we're not going to learn this year, but you should know. So you're going to learn it now very briefly. We have a principle, Ein Shaleach L'Dvar Avera. What does that principle mean? The simple meaning of it, this famous Machlokas Tosos. What it means, but the simple meaning, what does Ein Shaleach L'Dvar Avera mean?
can't send someone to do an avera.
You can.
Divrei
Rabbi, Divrei Tam Shomer. What does that mean? What does it mean, Lemaisa, when we say that Ein Shaleich Al Avera?
The Shaleich is culpable. You can't pass the burden of the sin to someone.
The Shaleich is culpable. Said the same thing two different ways. In other words, the onesh falls upon the shaliach, not the mishaleach. There is another shita in Tosfos, and a famous historical controversy I'm not going to explain, is that not only does it mean what you said, but it means more than that. It means there's no shlichus, which means if it's not a physical action, but it's a chalos. Let's say you send someone to be megaresh your wife in a way that it's an avera. If you say ein shliach l'avera means there's no shlichus, it means that she's not even divorced. Because a get, for example, is not about physical delivery. You need more than physical delivery. You need a legal... what's that? No, you don't send... You don't have to see the mamish in the harem, but the point is that it's not simply her physically acquiring property to get. There is, you could call it a mais in the sina, there is a halos of gerushin. And therefore, if you hold that ein shlich ha-vera means there's no shlichos, then it's not even chal. This is on Daf Yudam Advez and Bamatziah, but let me explain the backstory why I mentioned this. The Gemara has a question. There's something called the Kenyan Chatzar. What is the underlying principle of Kenyan Chatzar? What is the mechanism in which it works? And the Gemara has two possibilities. Either Chatzar is mitam yad, or Chatzar is mitam shlichus. Either a Chatzar is an extension of your hand, or it's like a shaliach. Now the obvious nafkamina, there's always a nafkamina, but the obvious nafkamina should have been whether a katan, in certain katana, whether or not a kinyan chatzar would work for her get. A katana has a yad to be mekabelis for get. The question is chatzera like yada? That seems to be what the Gemara is discussing at the end there. The Gemara tries to raise the following issue. There's a drasha in the psukim that we skipped over in Mishpatim. If he matzei si matzei v'yado ha-kineva, ein li ela yado b'yado, gado chatzera karpifo minayim, if you used somehow, however you use it, the roof, or the chatzer, or your enclosure to steal the object, how you know that you're chayiv kefel, talmud lomar hi matzei si matzei, the double language. So you see that what? That your chatzer can perform a kinyan for you to be kona, and I guess a lot. So the Gemara says the following, Bishlama, you say that shlichus is mitam yad, so I understand why a kinyan chatzer can effectuate a kinyan gazela. But if you say that chatzer is mitam shlichus, ain shlich adar avera, so how can the chatzer be kona for you, the kinyan ganeva? That's what the Gemara asks. The Gemara gives two terutzim and says, both which assume, obviously, that even though ain shaliach l'dvar avera, a chatzer can be kone for you, even if it's mitam shlichus. The first test that the Gemara gives is it depends whether or not the shaliach has a choice. If the shaliach has a choice, then you say, but a chatzer is inanimate, it has no choice, therefore the mishaliach is chayiv, the ganav is kone through the chatzer and with the ramifications. The other answer is much more interesting. The other answer is, Gemara says, that only when the shaliach has a bar chayuva, then the mishaleach is not punished. But if the shaliach is not a bar chayuva, then the mishaleach is punished. And the Gemara gives two examples of nafkamina between these two reasons. One of them is a man who said to a woman, akfi li katan. He instructs her to be makif rosh of the katan. Now, an isha is not musheres in akfi li katan. There are three lavim that do not apply to a woman. Baltashtas, Baltakif, and Baltatam in the Mason. Not Baltashtas, the one you're thinking of. Baltashtas, the Hashkashtas, Ka'asa Zakan. Even a woman who happens to have occasionally facial hair or beard, there's no issur of her cutting off with her shaving of the razor. There's no issur for an Ishna Kavas Arosh of shaving all the way around the head. And Baltatam in the Mason, if she's a Bas Kohen, there's no issur Tumah. She's not really a Kohen in that sense. So an Isha is not a Bar Chayuva for Baltakif. So what if a man asks a woman to be makif for katan? Makif for katan or makif himself? I don't remember how that works. But bottom line, that's one example. The other is a kohen who asks a Yisrael to be go out and to be mekadesh lo a grusha. Yisrael's allowed to marry a grusha. A kohen can't marry a grusha. So if you say, yesh shaliach l'dvar avera, that if you say that it's dependent upon the criteria when the mishaleach has a choice, then the mishaleach will be potter in both these cases, because the woman who does the hakapa, or
the Yisrael who is Mekadesh, the Grusha on behalf of the Kohen,
they have a choice whether to do or not. But if you say it's Mitam, whether the Shaliach is Baruch Yuva, then the Kohen is Loka and the Ish is Loka. Now, I mentioned that here for a reason. Why did I mention that here? There was definitely a reason. Ah, so it could be that the distinction is not is based between Chayvei Shoteh V'Katan and Bino Shluchan Avdo is not based upon whether or not they have a kinyan, whether or not they can technically be a shomer, make them shomer, whether or not they are a bar chiyuva and a nizikin. And if someone's not a bar chiyuva and nizikin, then you can't make them into a shaliach, in effect, a shomer, for the purposes, or shaliach for the purposes of assuming the mantle of responsibility for damages that are caused. Maybe. Okay, Kesser?
Which of the two understandings of how lo shaliach by
Avera
works?
How do we paskin, you mean?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Because if you tell your wife to shave your son's head, like she has das, like she knows that that's not a, that that's an avera. So if she does it, then she's still...
But it doesn't matter. According to one law shown, you're still chayiv.
Would she be chayiv as well?
No. What does she violate? She can't violate something that she can't violate. At best, she could be... If you, let's say... The Gemara says, Akvi Likatan. I don't know why it's Akvi Likatan. If you are... I know why Akvi Likatan. I think I know why. Right? Because they talk about both a Makif and a Nikaf being Chayiv. That's why. So bottom line is... now I know why it's a Katan. I'm not going to explain why. But bottom line is that the Isha is not Musheris against being Makif anybody. At worst, she's violating the favor.
So even though she knows, so having knowledge that something is
according
wrong,
according to the second lashon, doesn't matter. In fact, according to the first lashon, that's the pashtus in the Gemara is even if the woman doesn't know it's aser, according to the first lashon, the mishaleach is still potter because she has a choice whether to cut the hair off like that or not. She doesn't realize that it's aser. There is a shita in Tosfos. I don't know, some Rishonim have, I'm not sure that you say Yesh Shaliach Lavera by Shogeg. Because since the Svara of Divrei HaDivrei Talmud, Divrei Rishonim is not relevant, some Rishonim claim that you would say it by Shogeg, Yesh Shaliach Lavera. Let's say I ask you to take that object for me, and you don't realize it's not mine, you're stealing on my behalf. Am I Chayev? So you're not going to be Chayev Kefal, because you know I'm Chayev Kefal when you're amazing. But will I be Chayev? And that might depend upon the Shogeg issue. But let's, for our purposes, let's ignore that. Okay. I don't remember. The case that it came up in, the famous case, the Nod Bihuda, embroiled in a major controversy with many of his contemporaries, was a case where a man had been megarish his wife against her will in violation of the Chemer and Gershom, but he didn't give her the get. He had one of his friends give her the get. And no Dibi Huda claimed that she wasn't even divorced because Ein Shaliach L'Dvar Avera in that case.
Oh, that's a famous.
And that's based upon one day in Tosos, one of two Teirutzim in Tosos, that Ein Shaliach L'Dvar Avera means the Shlichos is in Chal. Not just that there's no Onesh, but that the Shlichos is in Chal. It's from a London's perspective, it's unbelievable. That's a big machlokas. You're probably the most famous get in Jewish history.
Most Achronim, I think, they say don't really agree with the Nod Bihuda and don't accept that teretz. The first teretz of two teretzim and Tosfos on Daf Yeromei Beis.
That the
shlichus. No, we don't assume. I think most Achronim don't assume that the shlichus is in chal. They just assume there's no onesh. The shlichus could be chal, but there's no onesh to the mishaleach.
Is that the only scenario in which the shlichus being chal would even be relevant?
No, shlichus being chal in general is always important. In other words, truma, get, all these things are not just physical actions. They require a chalos, and that requires a das. And when you have you have to remember, when we say shlucho shal adam kamoso, it doesn't mean you're my courier. Shlucho shal adam kamoso means you become me for a moment. Well, how can you be mekadosh and isha on my behalf? How can you give her kesef? Because you become me for a moment. Yeah, that's shlucho shal adam kamoso means literally kamoso. Literally kamoso. And if something breaks that bond, because you can't have shlichus, whatever the reason, because you're not, it's not a bar shlichus, because of ain't shlichus of aver, according to the one teretz and tosis, it means the thing just didn't ever happen. So if you hire someone, or you ask someone to murder someone on your behalf, you don't have to talk about a chalos,
right?
Because the victim is dead. That's just a fact. Right? But a get is not a fact. A get is a chalos. Right? If you write a few letters wrong in the get, it could be possible. Right? If you wrote shalol l'shma, even though it's the physically exact same get, it's no good. So anytime it's not just a physical action, but it has a legal transformation, So that requires formal shlichus. In Dine Mamaros, a good example which comes up in all over Dine Mamaros would be, let's say I owe you money and I give it to a shaliach to deliver to you. So when the it doesn't now, but let's say he's not a shaliach, let's say it's a guy. So if you get the money and he gives it to you and you take the money, I'm exempt from paying back the loan. Right? Why? Because the loan was paid back. But what happens, if you tell me, find the good enough Kamina. I didn't come up with a better enough Kamina than that. Let me give a better example. The halacha is that if you steal money from, if you owe somebody money and you deny owing him and you swear, you have to pay back Karen Vachomesh and bring a Karban Asham. But you're not allowed to bring the Karban Asham until you pay the Kesef. That's the rule. Therefore, now, so before you bring the Karban, you have to deliver the Kesef. What happens if I send the Kesef, the mailman? So,
right.
But if I have somebody who's a shaliach, in this case of him, and I give it to that person, he's a bar shlichus. As soon as it reaches the hands of the shaliach, on behalf of the
shaliach, reaches his shaliach.
No, if it's his shaliach and I give it to that person, he's not just a mail deliverer. So it reaches the shaliach's hands. It's like it reached the hands of the bialim. I can now bring the carbon.
Same with kiddushin. What if it's lost on the way? Do you retroactively or not?
No, that's the whole point. The difference between the mailman, and I was trying them an example, it's not a good example. It's tricky because let's say I have a guy, if you say to me, give it to this guy and he'll deliver it to me, that might constitute an exemption once I fulfill your instructions. And that might be, even though he's not a formal shaliach of yours, he can't because then shaliach is a guy. That's why I started going down that path, but I stayed away from that. This is the better example. But conceptually, that's one of the issues at hand. In other words, when is it considered reaching the hands of the malveh? So I'm now exempt from paying.
I think in terms of the korban, since you can't give it until you pay back the money,
it has to reach the possession of the owner. The possession could be him or his shaliach. Okay. Fine. I'll read one more line in this, and then I think I've had enough of reading the Mechilta. Meitav Sadeh, Meitav Karma. Meitav Sadeh, Shul Maasik, Meitav Kamar, Shul Nizik, Dir Rabbi Shmo, Rabbi Kibu, Merlobo, Kassel, Alamercha, Alash Hashem, and Nizakin, Beidis, Kavachor, Melehekdesh. Okay, we have to explain what this means. How is Rabbi Akiva arguing Rabbi Shmo? What did they disagree about? Now you'll notice what is not Rabbi Akiva's formulation here. Rabbi Shmuel says, "Meitav sader shel mazik, meitav." It's error. The first one, "Meitav sader shel nizik, meitav karma shel nizik." What did Rabbi Akiva not say? "Meitav karma shel, meitav sader shel mazik, meitav karma shel mazik." We're going to talk about this at length when we get to Dazayin and we do the Sri Deish. And the formulation of the Brisa, which is the original formulation of the Brisa in our Gemara. But the queer question you have to ask is, forget about the Kavachom and the Hekdesh part. What is the first part? How is Rabbi Akiva differing from Rabbi Yishmael? Yeah?
What is Rabbi Yishmael?
Because every other source, because it makes no sense, A, it's impossible. It can't be Meitav Sadeh Shemazik, but Meitav Karma Shemazik. That's absurd. It's got to be one of the... What?
The difference is Meitav Sadeh, Meitav Karma. Meitav Sadeh, which teaches that the Mazik pays with the...
It can only be one or the other, no?
There are two phrases in the pasuk.
Do you pay Meitav Shel Nizik or Meitav Shel Mazik?
Boom.
How can that be?
I pay with Meitav, and I pay the value of your Meitav.
How is that two things?
That's two things. The pasuk was Meitav twice. I don't know. One to tell me how I pay, one to tell me how much to pay.
Oh, okay. So the answer is this price appears in numerous other locations. The Bavli, the Yushalmi, and it's clearly there. Okay, fine.
Wait, what is Rabbi Yishmael even saying? What does that even mean?
Rabbi Yishmael, so that's a great question. We discussed this already a little bit. What does Meitav mean if it's Shal
Nizak? No, but how can it be one and the other?
It's not one and the other. It's Nizak in both cases.
Nizak? It's what?
It's supposed to be Meitav Sadeh Shal Nizak, Meitav Shkama Shal Nizak. Not Masik and Nizak. That's just a toast so far in either the Bar Ilan or in the Mechilta. I didn't check what this has. Now, this is the Nusach in the Mechilta. I'm willing to bet you that numerous Kisveyad, line 17. Well, he just says, yeah. Yeah, so there are manuscripts in the Gemara in Gittin and the Gemara in Bava Kamma, and the Yushalmi have Nisach in both cases.
Okay, no, we know what Nisach is. We spoke about that. I'm just confused about... Yeah, okay.
Yeah, okay. Fine. Any questions? If there are no questions on this, so I'm going to stop with the Mechilta now. And on Tuesday, we will begin doing the Yushalmi, and we will, the Yushalmi should not take so long, although I may give some introduction to Yushalmi for all the newcomers, and then we will move to the Bavli on what I outlined for you in the email.